Let's go ahead and open our Bibles to 2 Samuel chapter 14, verse number 28, where we are told that Absalom lived 2 full years in Jerusalem without coming into the king's presence. So I believe we're talking about the year 987 BC, which would be the 31st year of King David's time on the throne. He's about 61 years of age. His son Absalom is right around 30, and his son Solomon is right around the age 9. Absalom, you remember, had executed his half-brother Amnon for the rape of Absalom's full sister Tamar, and that he spent 2 years working on that plot to get that done after he had seen that his father was going to do nothing. I believe and express to you my opinion that Absalom probably intended to kill his father at the same time that he killed Amnon, but circumstances did not allow for him to get that done. But as soon as Absalom did kill Amnon, he ran off to his grandfather's kingdom up in Aram, or up in Syria, north of the Israeli kingdom. And he spent 3 years there before Joab convinced David that Absalom needed to come back to Jerusalem. And David agreed, but would not let him come back into kingdom life, that is, back into the palace, back into the court. Well, Absalom's had enough of that. He wants to be reinstated in his relationship with his father. I have zero doubt in my mind that he sees himself as being the next king. After all, he is the eldest surviving son of David. And the normal procedure is the eldest surviving son succeeds his father upon his death. So he wants to start working on that transition. So verse 29, he does what he can to get back into the palace. Absalom sent for Joab to send him to the king, but Joab would not come to him. Then he sent for him a second time, but Joab would not come. So Absalom sees Joab is his conduit to King David. I mean, after all, Joab helped him come back to Jerusalem. Why wouldn't he help him get back in the palace? But interestingly, Joab ignores him. Well, he's not going to put up with this because, after all, he's starting to see himself as the future king. And future kings feel they need to be obeyed by those that will work for them. Verse 30, then he said to his servants, see, Joab's field is next to mine. He has barley there. Go set it on fire. So Absalom's servants set the field on fire. Now this tells us that we're talking about somewhere in the springtime, or very close to the beginning of spring, because the barley harvest officially begins during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So this grain sounds like it's getting pretty close to being ripe. And now it's burnt up. And that gets Joab's attention. Verse 31, Joab arose and went to Absalom at his house, and he said to him, why have your servants set my field on fire? And Absalom answered Joab, because I sent word to you, come here that I may send you to the king. So basically, when I tell you to jump, I expect you to jump. Now, what was he wanting him to pass on? Well, that comes up next. To ask, why have I come from Geshur? It would have been better for me to be there still. Now, therefore, let me go into the presence of the king, and if there's guilt in me, let him put me to death. So he tells Joab, I've been cooling my heels here for 2 years. Why am I back from my grandfather's kingdom? It's not making any difference in my life. In fact, why don't you tell the king, if he feels that I have done something worthy of death, just get it over with and execute me. Otherwise, let me be the prince of Israel. So Joab complies. He went to the king. He told him, and the king summoned Absalom. So he came to the king and he bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed Absalom. So things look like they're patched up now, but they're not, because Absalom's got other plans in mind. As I said, David's about 61 when this reunion takes place, but Absalom's not so sure he wants to wait until his father dies of old age. I even think it's possible that in his mind, he believes David should die for his part in letting Amnon get away with raping Tamar. So he starts to do a slow coup. That is, to take the kingdom away from David bit by bit over time. And this is how it's described, starting in chapter number 15 of 2 Samuel. After this, Absalom got himself a chariot and horses and 50 men to run before him. Now that's typical king behavior. The Israelis were told that they were not supposed to have their leaders multiply horses or wives to themselves. They were definitely not supposed to be using chariots and horses. And yet here's Absalom figuring, I need to be like all the other kings of the nations around here. I need to have a nice bit of transport that shows my station in life. And I need to have people that are serving me, waiting on me, and doing my bidding. 50 guys to run in front of my chariot through town and through the country. That sounds about right. But here's how he was actually stealing the kingdom. Verse 2, Absalom used to rise early and stand beside the way of the gate. And when any man had a dispute to come before the king for judgment, Absalom would call to him and say, from what city are you? And when he would say, oh, your servant is of such and such a tribe in Israel, Absalom would say to him, see, your claims are good and right, but there's no man designated by the king to hear you. And then Absalom would say, oh, that I were judge in the land. Then every man with a dispute or cause might come to me, and I would give him justice. So the way that the justice system worked in the time of David is that simple cases were solved at the lowest possible level. There might be a judge over 10 families. And then another judge above him that would be over 5 groups of 10 families. This is the way that Moses set it up back before his passing. And so there were these multiple levels going upward. And if your case couldn't be settled by a lower court, it was moved up to the next court. And then if it couldn't be fixed on that one, it was moved up to the next one, until finally there was the highest court of all, which was to come before the leader of Israel. So in the time of David, that's King David. So King David is spending every single day, several hours of each of those days, listening to court cases that weren't decided farther down the chain. There's going to be a big backup when you've only got one guy hearing all those appealed cases. So these people are lined up outside the palace. And that's where Absalom goes and talks with them and basically tells them, the problem is my dad. He's not organized enough. Oh, yeah, I can tell that you've got a good case and it needs to be dealt with, but, well, you're here in a long line. Nobody even to take care of the bureaucracy of your situation. But if I were in charge, I'd fix all that. So he's politicking. He's campaigning for the kingship. And it apparently falls on a lot of receptive ears. And so some of these people start showing him the honor that you would show a king. Verse 5, whenever a man came near to pay homage to him, that is, get down and bow before him, he would put out his hand and take hold of him and kiss him. Now, what's happening there? Basically, he's now trying to pretend he's just one of them. So if somebody tries to bow in front of him like he's a king, he says, oh, no, no, don't do that. Stand up here. Give me a hug, man to man. Let me kiss you on your cheek just as you kiss me on my cheek. We're brothers. So he's trying to be a man of the people as well. Verse 6. Thus Absalom did to all of Israel who came to the king for judgment. And so Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. So his campaign was effective. And it went on, according to verse 7, for 4 years. So that brings us to the year that I estimate as being 983 going into 982 BC. That would be the 35th year of King David. David is now 65 years of age, and he has a son named Solomon who's 13, while Absalom must be in his early 30s somewhere, probably 32, 33, something in that neighborhood. So I think Absalom realizes that he has to do something now. Because probably he's seeing his father grooming Solomon and treating him as if he's going to be the next king. And Absalom can't wait for David to die of natural causes, because if that happens and he's made arrangements for Solomon to go on the throne, then that's going to cut Absalom out. So he decides to use his popularity at this point to effectively displace his father from the throne, to do the real coup work. And I would expect that he planned on executing his father, and more than likely would have used the excuse he allowed a rapist to live. He may have even, because we can only speculate here, he may have even claimed that his father was himself an adulterer and complicit in the death of an honorable man named Uriah the Hittite many years earlier. But he does not plan on letting his father continue on the throne any longer. And this is how he carries that out. Verse number 7, Absalom said to the king, please let me go and pay my vow, which I vowed to he who is in Hebron. That is, that's where he's going to pay the vow. For your servant vowed a vow while I lived in Geshur, in Aram, saying, if he who is will indeed bring me back to Jerusalem, then I will offer worship to he who is. So his cover story for going to Hebron is this. Back 7+ years ago, when I was living with grandfather in Geshur, in his kingdom up north, I promised God that if he would bring me back safe and sound here to Jerusalem, that I would do something special for him at Hebron. Well, I need to go do that. So David agrees. Says the king said to him, go in peace. Now, why is he wanting to go to Hebron? We can have several suggestions here. Hebron is where Absalom was born. Hebron is where King David was first made the king of the tribe of Judah. Hebron is also the place where David was initially made the king of United Israel. So there was some site there where that ceremony of coronation took place. It is where the Cave of the Patriarchs, the Cave Machpelah, is located. The tomb of the patriarchs and the matriarchs, Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebekah, Jacob and Leah. They're all there, the big names of the book of Genesis. So it's a special place to Israel as a whole, and it is definitely a special place to the kingdom of David. So it seems to Absalom the perfect place for him to have a public ceremony acknowledging him as king. So he arose and he went to Hebron. But, verse 10 reports, Absalom sent, or had sent, secret messengers through all the tribes of Israel, saying, "As soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then say, Absalom is king at Hebron." The trumpet signals were already in use, more than likely, to announce the new moon declaration, the Sabbath start, start of certain holidays. And the way it would happen is the first official trumpeter would sound their signal, and then trumpeters would be spaced within earshot in all directions from there. And the moment they heard the trumpet sound, they would blow their trumpet, and then trumpets that were located within earshot of them farther away, they would blow their trumpets, and it would just be repeated over and over and over and over again, to the effect that the moment that Absalom's trumpeter sounds in Hebron, until the people up in northern Galilee here, is a matter of minutes. They will know that the trumpet is sounded and Absalom is king. It's the rapid communication of that particular time period. So he's got people spaced all over Israel with the instructions. The moment the trumpet is sounded in your area, make sure everybody knows I'm the new king. Verse number 11. Something else that he does. With Absalom went 200 men from Jerusalem who were invited guests, and they went in their innocence and knew nothing. So these 200 guys are key members of David's court from Jerusalem. They think they're going to be a participant in a special ceremony of vow keeping at Hebron, perhaps at the Cave of Machpelah. But they don't realize that they're actually going to be witnesses to the inauguration of a new king. Probably Absalom's intention is the moment that he becomes king and everybody's celebrating it, these guys will really feel pressure to get on board with it. And since they're not anywhere near David, the likelihood of them just going on with it is pretty high. Now, verse 12 lets us know about one other guy that's in on the plot. While Absalom was offering the sacrifices, he sent for Ahithophel the Gilonite, David's counselor from his city, Gilo. And the conspiracy grew strong, and the people of Absalom kept increasing. So this Ahithophel character has been a loyal servant of David for many years. He's offered him good advice, and now he has become part of the Absalom administration. Verse number 13. A messenger came to David saying, "The hearts of the men of Israel have gone after Absalom." Now this might be the immediate response to the trumpet sound reaching Jerusalem, which would have probably happened in a matter of seconds after the trumpet was sounded 30 miles away down in Hebron. Because remember, each trumpeter is probably a few miles apart from one another, but they are very quickly playing their trumpet when they hear the trumpet closer to Hebron. So within a matter of minutes, the people at Jerusalem would have been hearing this story that Absalom has been inaugurated as king by the people of Israel at Hebron. And the moment David realizes that's what's going on, he sees great danger, not just for himself, but for anyone intimately connected to his kingdom. So a messenger came to David saying, "The hearts of the men of Israel have gone after Absalom." David said to all his servants who were with him at Jerusalem, "Arise, let us flee, or else there will be no escape for us from Absalom. Go quickly, lest he overtake us quickly and bring down ruin on us and strike the city with the edge of the sword." Now, it's going to take a little while for Absalom to come back physically to Jerusalem. It's about a day's travel from Hebron back to Jerusalem. And no doubt, Absalom is taking time for a festival or a feast in connection with his coronation. So he won't be back for a couple of days. So David realizes, I've got to get on the move now before fighting can possibly break out here in the capital city. Verse number 15, "The king's servants said to the king, 'Behold, your servants are ready to do whatever my lord the king decides.' So the king went out and all his household after him." So he's evacuating the palace. But he does this. Says the king left 10 concubines to keep the house. Now, why does he leave 10 of his wives, junior wives, but 10 of his wives, nonetheless, at the palace? Two things. Number one, he doesn't want to leave the palace empty because these women are not just there by themselves. They would have had their own staffs to look after them, you know, protect them. But to make sure that the palace doesn't get looted, doesn't get overrun by celebrants that are pro-Absalom. So basically, keep the palace, which is the palace of Israel, in good order. He does not think they are in danger from Absalom, and this is the reason why. They are concubines. They do not have the legal rights that full wives have. And the key thing about a full wife is that they have a right to have their sons counted in the successive line to the throne. So these concubines are not a threat to Absalom's claim to the throne whatsoever, because none of their boys are counted in the succession. So David feels they are perfectly safe from being harmed in any way by Absalom. There's going to be a weird twist, though, that turns out not to be the case. Verse 17, "The king went out, all the people after him. They halted at the last house." So as they're evacuating off to the east, David stops right there by the last house of Jerusalem and watches as everybody gets out. He wants to make sure everybody's safe. So all his servants pass by him, all the Kerethites. This is a word that means the cut ones. It's a reference to the ceremony of cutting a covenant, where these men swore their allegiance to David. So this is David's personal bodyguard. And then all the Pelethites, which is a word that refers to running. So these are the runners. These are the courier corps of David, the messengers. So those two groups specifically tied to David, they get out and they're on the way heading toward the Jordan Valley. And all the 600 Gittites who had followed him from Gath passed on before the king. So this is a fairly large group of Philistine warriors from the city of Gath that are under the command of the man that's mentioned next. Verse 19, "The king said to Ittai the Gittite, 'Why do you also go with us? Go back, stay with the king, for you are a foreigner and also an exile from your home. You came only yesterday. Shall I today make you wander about with us, since I go I know not where? Go back, take your brothers with you, and may he who is show steadfast love and faithfulness to you." So these Gath warriors have apparently just recently arrived and became part of David's military. And so David is like, "You don't need to go with me. You're not Israelis. You've recently arrived here. I think that you would have no problem getting along with Absalom. You have nothing to fear from him. In fact, he would probably see you as a potential asset to his kingdom. So you guys just stick here. I don't know how long I'm going to be gone. If I'll ever get back here again, stay here." But I love the response. Verse 21, "But Ittai answered the king, 'As he who is lives, and as my lord the king lives, wherever my lord the king shall be, whether for death or for life, there also will your servant be.'" So he swears by the name of the one true God, his allegiance and his men's allegiance to David. They are Israelis in the making. I think they are converts to the true faith, and they swear their allegiance to David. "Wherever you go, whatever happens to you, we will stick with you." And David loves that. David said to Ittai, "Go then, pass on." So Ittai the Gittite passed on with all his men and all the little ones who were with him, so their families. And all the land wept aloud as all the people passed by, and the king crossed the brook Kidron, and all the people passed on toward the wilderness. So the Kidron is the river or the brook between Jerusalem on the west and the Mount of Olives on the east. And they've now left the neighborhood of Jerusalem, the holy city.